welcome to the Fertility Conversations podcast. The goal of this podcast is to create more awareness about infertility and to provide support to people trying to conceive. Thank you for listening today, and we hope you will be encouraged. And now, here is your host, Ola.
Hello, welcome to episode 2. Today I have with me a lovely guest, TJ. She's the author of Sin and Secrets, a book detailing her experience in male factor infertility. She lives in America and will be sharing her experience with us. Her book, Seeming Secrets, is currently available on Amazon, and you can also find her on Instagram at Seeming Secrets. So welcome, TJ, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Yay. So to start off, please tell me a bit about yourself. What do you do for fun?
My name is TJ Payton. I do live in America. I live in Georgia. The closest area that people would know is Atlanta, Georgia.
Yes,
people know that area. So I live about 30 minutes outside of Atlanta.
Okay.
I currently work in public health. I do public health education work. And I'm very passionate about the advocacy work I do outside of work related to male infertility. In terms of what I do for fun, I like to run outside. I'm an avid runner. I love to journal. That's my outlet. I volunteer at church. Well, now you do it virtual because, of course, we can't go because of COVID. And I love football, American football. So
yes, there's a difference.
Right. So I know more football facts than most men do. So I do enjoy football. So I'm hoping it'll come back on soon. So that's me.
Great. Thank you. And so talking about today's topic, male factor infertility, how did you find out that you were dealing with that in your relationship?
Sure. So my husband and I had grown up together in church. So we've known each other since we were about 6 years old. So, but we didn't start dating until our junior year in high school around that time. And our senior year, he told me that God said I was going to be his wife. And I was like, I talked to God and God didn't tell me that. But fast forward, and we got married in our early 20s. And so we wanted to enjoy our marriage at the beginning. So for about the first 4 years, we did not pursue pregnancy. In that fifth year, we decided that, okay, it's time for us now to start pursuing pregnancy. And I had had problems with cystic fibroids in the past, and so I was on birth control. So I stopped my birth control, and the doctor said, oh, it's going to take, 6 months to a year for you to have a child. But everything checked out for me. I was fine to carry a child. So when, 12 months turned into 14 months and nothing was happening, I got nervous and I went back to my doctor and said, hey, it's been over a year and I haven't been able to get pregnant. What's happening? So they ran some additional tests and did some blood work, and everything for me came back fine. So my doctor suggested, maybe it'll take a little more time, but maybe you should have your husband checked. And so I was like, why? And my husband was really confused, but we said, hey, let's go ahead and have the check. And sure enough, when we had my husband did a semen analysis, and it came back that he was the one that was infertile. And they couldn't really have a clear diagnosis, but the closest thing was azoospermia, which means he doesn't produce any sperm at all.
Wow. And was there any treatment option for him, or?
So the couple of treatment options we tried, the first one we tried Clomid, and Clomid is supposed to work some chemicals in the brain in order to get his brain to help him to produce testosterone. And that was unsuccessful. We also tried HCG shots. And with the HCG shots, those were supposed to help in increasing his testosterone levels. And hopefully a byproduct of that would be able to increase his sperm count. But that did not work. his urologist also suggested that he do a testicular biopsy to see if there was some sperm hidden in the testicles. And we didn't do the micro testicular biopsy. We just did the general. And they didn't find any sperm that way either. And they could have done the more invasive technique, but because of the pain he was in with the just the regular testicular biopsy, we opted not to move forward with the more invasive technique. So now he currently just takes testosterone, and that's for him to have, you know, a healthy quality of life, not to produce sperm.
Wow. I can imagine for men, this must have been quite a difficult diagnosis to have. Did this diagnosis have any impact on your husband, how he felt, or on your relationship?
Absolutely. At first, you go through the stages of grief. You're shocked, you're angry, you're sad, and you go through that cycle. I know for my husband, I watched him die, but he was still breathing, and his soul died. He died emotionally, and he shut down completely. For men, especially men of color, you know, having an issue with your male reproduction and not being able to produce a child is huge. It's a blow to your ego. It's a blow to your manhood. And I had to deal with trying to help him through his feelings of inadequacy. And he didn't want to tell anyone, not even our parents. And so keeping this secret and people asking us about our pregnancy and when are we going to get pregnant and why don't we have any kids, it was very frustrating for him and me. And he mentioned several times that he wanted a divorce so that I could go find someone else to have a child with. But of course, I wasn't looking to have a child with anyone else. And when we got married, our vows weren't contingent upon him producing a child. So we had to deal with that piece. I also found out about 4 years into the process that he thought about even committing suicide, taking his own life, because he felt like he would be better without me with the infertility issue, so I could feel free to move along and not have that tied to him. For me, it was an emotional roller coaster. I went through a lot of depression. I went through anger. I'm a Christian, and I got angry at God. I stopped praying. I stopped going to church. There were a few people I confided in, but it was difficult to find someone who understood what I was going through. So a lot of it I dealt with alone, and I had to go to my journal. And we tried to wear a good face for the public because, of course, like I said, my husband didn't want anyone to know. But it was definitely a very lonely and discouraging time in our lives. And mentally and emotionally, we went through a lot.
Wow, that sounds like a whole lot. How did you deal with that? I know you mentioned journaling, but did you have any counseling, or how did you get through that whole time?
So my husband did not want to go to counseling because he did not, again, want anyone to know that he had the issue. So my next thought was I have to connect with someone. And so I had been praying about, you know, there has to be someone. And I was going through Facebook, and a friend of mine, one day she was slim and the next day she had a baby. So I'm like, well, she wasn't pregnant. So how did this all happen? So I got the courage to give her a phone call and just ask her, you know, not trying to get in your business, but I wanted to know, how did you get your baby? And then she started revealing her infertility issues to me. And it was almost like a weight had been lifted, because I finally found someone that could relate to what I was going through. In her situation, it was both she and her husband that had the infertility issues, but she still could identify with my emotions. For my husband, one of his friends actually lost a child and in childbirth, and his wife had to have a hysterectomy, and she was infertile. But the connection there was they could both identify with infertility as men, and so they could share in that grief, mm-hmm. As a man and as a man of color. So that was his outlet to talk about his frustration with infertility, how he could deal with his emotions as a man. So even though we didn't go to formal counseling as a couple, we were able to connect with people who understood what we were going through. And through those people, we were able to reconnect as a couple, he and I, to deal with our infertility and also to then go to seek counsel to deal with our issues. But it had to be a separate grieving and mourning process before we could collectively grieve and mourn, because how we dealt with it was very different. And when we tried to do it as a couple, it just exploded into something else. So that's how we kind of got through to the next, to the other side of the issue.
Right. Yeah, I find that it's always very hard to speak to someone that doesn't actually understand what's going on. But when you connect with people that have gone through similar, had similar experiences, then it's easier to for them to understand where you're coming from, at least to talk to someone that gets it.
Right. Right.
Right. And just like you were saying, it, of course, it had a huge impact on your husband and his ego and how he felt. And that's exactly how it is even here in Nigeria, because people always assume when you're dealing with infertility that it has to do with the woman. It's the focus is always on the woman. The test is always on the woman. Hardly do you ever find people. And even when people know it is potentially the man, they still focus on the woman. So I'm not sure how it is in the US, but here in Nigeria, it's always assumed as the female.
That is exactly the same as it is in the U.S. What I found was that when we first found out, of course, you know, you try to Google your way through things and get on the internet. The internet becomes your doctor and your counselor. But I could not find hardly anything on male infertility. That I did find focused on white men. And so my husband didn't want to read that. Yes. And there was nothing really to talk about men of color, not even Hispanic men. Even very few international articles such as infertility in Africa. Maybe I found maybe two articles maybe on male infertility, but nothing that I could say, okay, this could help us figure this out. And then as a wife, I needed something for me to tell me how to help my husband and help myself. Exactly. A lot of what I found, you know, the women were getting a divorce, and that's not what I wanted to do. I really wanted to stay in the marriage, but I also had my own grief, and my husband would get frustrated because a lot of times people would assume that I was the reason why, you know, we couldn't have children. And so it became a, not only was he dealing with his grief, but he also wanted to protect me from people thinking that it was me.
Right.
And, you know, people would say, well, why don't you just do IVF? Well, you need sperm to do IVF. Well, you know, why don't you just do this? In every situation that they said, a component of sperm was in it. And even if we did donor sperm, I'm not sure how he would have felt about me carrying another child. He said he would be okay, but that's what his lips said. I don't think his heart said that.
Yeah.
And for me, it just felt weird to make that an option as well. So it is the same in America. There are very few people that have a discussion about male infertility, which is one of the reasons why I wrote my book, because there was no resource out there for me, and I knew in my mind, I felt like I wasn't the only woman out there that needed something to help her figure out if what she was feeling was right, okay, and if someone could identify with what she was going through.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's what I'm actually going to ask you, that how did the book come to be about? Because I know you mentioned earlier that you had done a lot of journaling and you couldn't find anyone else that was doing something similar. So is that how the book came to be about then, why you chose to write it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had been journaling for a while and I kept getting, I had a really good friend that I confided in and she said, you know, if you can't find a resource, you should create your own. Wow. And I said, okay. And my background is in English and communications before I got into public health. So naturally, I liked to write, I liked to read. And so I just started putting the chapters from my journal into this book. I definitely wanted the book to be short and a quick read, because even though the book spans the time we found out in 2013 till about 2018, I wanted it to be quick in terms of how I went through the process, so people would be able to read it. And it's a very emotional book, but it's honest. Mm-hmm. I talk about divorce. I talk about being a Christian and having this break with God. I talk about being jealous of women who do have a child and who were pregnant. Even of my friends, I stopped going to baby showers. I broke down in a store buying baby shower gifts, and I just told people, even my own goddaughter was born, and I said, I can't come because I can't do it. And so it was very therapeutic for me to write the book, and I came up with Semen Secrets because, you know, his semen had a secret, and no one told us about male infertility. He, you know, went to his checkups with his doctor, and nothing signaled that this was an issue until we tried to have a baby, and here the secret was revealed, but there was nothing we could do about it. So that's how I came up with the title of the book as well.
Wow. So that's a great title. I think it's actually perfect. Yeah, for that. And when you were talking about breaking down in the store when trying to purchase something for a baby shower, I think it's important, like you noted, you couldn't do it. So it's good for us to take care of our minds, right? If you feel that you're not up to it, it's important that you do what's best for you, right? And not feel guilty, right? Because sometimes you feel like, I shouldn't be jealous, right? I shouldn't feel this way. But yeah, you have to do what's best for you.
And I felt like also that a lot of times I try to make other people feel okay about my infertility. So I will put other people's feelings ahead of my own. If somebody made a comment about, you know, why don't you have a baby? I want to tell them, stay out of my uterus and I will stay out of your uterus.
Yes.
But of course, you know, I try to learn to give people grace, but then I also had to understand that I was only sending myself deeper into a depressed state, because every time I would go to these events, or I would keep someone else's child, or I would get these like a mom cards, I would break down because I always would host a baby shower, but I wanted to be the guest of honor. And so I had to stop because I was not emotionally ready to tackle the issue of going to see someone else with their baby. And especially when it was younger family members or people who weren't married. And I felt like, you know, my husband and I were married. It wasn't a broken home. We financially could take care of a child. And here we were not being able to do it. And so I had to just be honest with myself that I'm not ready. And I told my closest friends that I was not ready. And that's who I found out who my friends were, because those who understood and didn't judge me said, take your time. And I appreciated that. And those who were a little confused, let me know, well, you know, some people are for a reason and some people are for a season. And I think in this part of my life, your season is up. So it was helpful for me to also go through that process.
And that's very important, you know, to be able to identify that, because again, some people can't deal with it. Some people don't understand why you feel that way. They feel that you should be able to put that aside and just come and just talk about it. But, you know, again, you have to do what's best for you at that time. And so writing the book, did that help you deal with infertility? Did you find that sharing that experience helped in any way?
Absolutely. Sharing my experience helped me find other people who had a similar experience, and also put me in this infertility community where I felt like I wasn't alone. And it also gave me an opportunity to be a blessing. sometimes we don't understand what our testimony will be or what our purpose is. Yes. And especially when you're in the valley and you can't see outside of the valley, there is a tendency to feel like you're never going to come out of that valley experience. But if it wasn't for that valley experience, once I came out of the valley and got to the mountaintop, Amen. I could clearly see what God was doing, but I just wish he would have told me what he was doing. And I couldn't feel like, I couldn't understand why it had taken so long. But I ended my book. When I finished the book, we did not have a prospect of a baby, but I made a declaration. A couple of things I did. So the first thing I did was in about years five, I picked a room in my house and I said, this is going to be my nursery. Wow. And so I went and I put sticky notes on places. This is where I want the crib to be. And this is where I want the bookcase to be. And this is where I want, you know, her toys to be or his toys to be. And that's where I would go in the room to write, to pray, to cry, to scream, because I wanted that to be my nursery. And when it seemed like back in 2017, I finally got to a point where, you know, it had been since 2013 when we had found out. We had been married, coming up on 10 years. So it had been 9 years total. We hadn't had a child. And I just said I wasn't going to go into my 10th year of marriage and my 10th year of this process letting infertility ruin my life. And so the hardest thing for me was to come to terms with the term never, because I had to accept that, God, if I'm never going to become a mom, then that means you have a different purpose for me. But never was so hard. And it took me even a couple of days to say it out of my mouth. Yeah. But I never gave up on the impossible possible, because, you know, I'm a firm believer. The God is a God of the impossible. And so I finished my book because I wanted an ending to say I had a baby and I didn't, but I had to put out the book. So I put it out. And in 2018, my husband and I did a home study to do adoption. And we had tried adoption before, but the rules in America about adoption are so crazy. It's very hard to do it. But we just took a shot in the dark. And exactly 2 weeks after we finished doing all the necessary paperwork for adoption, the friend that I had been confiding in, the attorney she used to adopt her girls, had a mom that wanted to give her daughter up for adoption. And so exactly a year later, after I said I wasn't going to let infertility run my life, we adopted our baby girl.
Wow.
And so what God told me the first time I held my baby girl, I heard, I didn't waste your tears. Mm-hmm. And it was so, I mean, a rush of emotions, and it let me know that he heard me every time. Right. And he was very present. But if I didn't go through the process, then you wouldn't have me on this show. So, yeah. So here we are with the testimony.
Amazing. Wow. Congratulations. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
It seems like faith played a big part in your journey, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I want to tell people out there, I'm not sure what you believe, but some days you're not going to have faith. Mm-hmm. And that's where you have to be honest with yourself. Some days you're not going to be able to see the impossible. And that is okay. A lot of times, I know as a Christian doing this, I would beat myself up. Like, Christians aren't supposed to not have faith, and Christians aren't supposed to be mad at God.
Yeah.
And so going through this as a Christian was even harder, because you're supposed to put to the world that you can believe. But I was brought to this scripture at the time I was at my lowest, and it was Jesus, before he was ready to get crucified, he even asked God to take away this cup from him. So even he got to a place where he was like, oh God, I can't do it. Right. So in that moment, for me, that helped build my faith. And that may not help some people, but I needed those little reminders that he was still present, because there were days when I would scream out, like, where are you? Because I don't see you. And those were the hardest parts for me in the journey.
Right. But I also love how you said that faith was very important for you, but how you also held on to, you created a room, you had the crib, you had everything set up. So even while you were going through the journey, you were believing, you were acting in faith that this room will be used by a baby someday.
Right, right,
and
right.
That's just amazing.
Right.
Thank God. I have one question that's actually about infertility as well. How would you say it changed you? I know you mentioned that, you know, of course, if that hadn't happened, you wouldn't be here today. And of course, you wouldn't have written your book. But how else do you think infertility changed you as a person? Like, what would you tell your younger self now?
I would tell my younger self to not be so judgmental. Right. Because before infertility, you always wonder, why don't they have a baby? And what are they doing? And, you know, what's wrong with them? and taking things for granted, like you assume, at least for us, I assume that there was a formula, like you date, you get married, and then you have kids. Like that is the next step in the journey.
Exactly.
And so, I would tell my younger self to not be a planner, because you can plan and you can say, you know, oh, but you know, my thing was by 33, I want to have all of my 2 or 3 kids. And by 33, I did not have a piece of baby. So, I would tell myself that, one, you know, just live your life, live every day. You know, the Bible is clear. Give us this day our daily bread, not tomorrow, today.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so I had to focus on each day separately. And then I would tell my younger self, don't judge. You don't know anyone's story at all. You don't know anyone's story. Even in adoption, you know, not to judge, like, well, why does this baby look different from this person? Who knows? We could all be adopted.
Exactly.
to not just prejudge people in their pregnancy and in their walk, because you just never know someone's story and you never know someone's heartbreak. And the last thing I would tell my younger self is to understand grace. Because there would be women I would run into, you know, and sometimes women can get attitudes and everything, and we can be, we can not be nice to one another, but I'm always mindful of that woman could be dealing with her own infertility, or that woman can be dealing with a divorce, or that woman can be dealing with this. And so definitely as women of color, I've learned to just give women a little bit more grace, and men grace, because you never know if a husband isn't speaking what he's dealing with, because men keep their things internal.
True.
So just to give people grace, I think I will also tell my younger self, but definitely don't assume that I know another woman's story, because I don't.
True. Very well said. Thank you. Since it's also Men's Health Month, I know you've had some experience with male factor infertility. Any advice or that you like to give out to men or young men out there?
Sure. Don't be afraid to go get a semen analysis. Let me back up and say, don't be afraid to go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. Men don't like to go to the doctor. but all men, and definitely men of color, are at high risk, even from men of color in America to men in color in Africa or wherever you are. You're at high risk for certain diseases that other races and other cultures are not. And so if you want to live, you need to go to the doctor. That's why they're here. And not necessarily saying that you have to agree with everything the doctor says, but I strongly believe in going to get your yearly checkups. Those tests in terms of your cholesterol, high blood pressure, go get those things checked out, because you never know, you know, what could be going on with you and your body, and get a semen analysis if you're going to get married. It's nothing wrong with getting a semen analysis. And your wife, get the same way the wife goes to get checked to make sure her eggs are in line and all of this, yes, the man should be doing the same thing, because if there's not a problem, there's nothing wrong with it. And then in the area of sexual health, I know my husband and I, we get HIV and STD tests when we go every year.
Oh,
and
wow, nice.
Some people said, you know, why do you do that? Well, your test should come back negative and my test should come back negative. And if it doesn't, it will be a different show. So, I think it's important that everyone is transparent with their health. And I think we have to be honest about what is going on with our bodies as a couple, because, you know, now it's so important for my husband and I, because we do have a child. So yes, his life is important just as much as my life is. So we go to the dentist regularly. We get our annual checkups. We get our blood work. He now has the urologist that he goes to consistently. Mm-hmm. And it's important that he goes to, and he also sees an endocrinologist to help with his endocrine levels, given his issues with testosterone. So I would tell men, you know what milestones, you know, if you need to get a prostate exam, get your checkups, because you just never know when something pops up and it may be too late. And if you're getting married, you don't want to wait till year five when you're trying to have a baby to try to figure out what's happening with the both of you. That should be in year one to make sure that when you're ready, you both can do it.
Well, thank you very much. That's excellent advice. Thank you. And as a wrap up, are there any words of encouragement or hope for other couples dealing with male factor infertility?
Yes. I would tell other couples to first get alone with yourself to be honest about where you are. Mm-hmm. I try to convince myself that I was okay not having a baby to be strong for my husband. And that was not okay because I wasn't okay. Right. And the more I try to push those feelings back on the back burner to try to make my mind feel what I thought I was supposed to feel, it sent me down a deeper path of depression. So I would first say, be honest about where you are, how you feel. Maybe you can't tell your spouse or significant other, and maybe you don't want to go to counseling, but there is an infertility community. I've been blessed to have women strangers DM me just to say, I want to talk to you about my infertility. I know I don't know you, but you're the only person I could talk to. Yeah. And that's fine. Because I don't know you, so I can't share your business with anybody and you don't know me. So there's a community out there that can embrace you. So first, get some help, get someone that you can at least vent to and understand your issue. And next, you have to live every day as one day. And I know it's going to be hard not to think in the what ifs, or, you know, think about what the future would be. But it's so hard because you never know what the next page is. When I was on page number 5, God was on page 55. So you never know where your journey will lead you. You just have to take every day and give it its own time. And the last thing I would say is give yourself grace. Give yourself grace to cry. There were a couple of days, a couple of times I had to take off from work because I would see somebody pregnant in the bathroom and it would hit me.
Yeah.
And I would have to say, you know what? I need to leave work. I need to step out. I need to take a breather. I need to take a break. There would be times my husband and I would get into an issue and the underlying issue would be the infertility, but we made it something else. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know I would ever be a parent. And for some people, they just never are parents. True. And but they have another purpose, and so be open to whatever that purpose is and be open to all paths to parenthood. My friend said you either want to be pregnant or you want to be a mom. And so if you want to be pregnant, then that's one area. But if you want to be a mom, there's surrogacy, there's donor sperm, there are donor eggs, there are donor embryos, there's adoption. There's so many options out there for people who want to have a child. You just have to get to a place where you're open for those options. So if you want to be a parent, don't give up on that dream. And don't give up on not having the money, because you just never know if it's supposed to be that you're supposed to adopt. I know our blessing came from so many places in order to afford to do the adoption. So be open to whatever path to parenthood may lead you, even if it doesn't lead you to a path at all.
Wow. Thank you so much. That's excellent advice and words of encouragement. And thank you so much for doing what you're doing, being an advocate for male factor infertility and creating more awareness about it. Because even in the Instagram community, there's very few people actually talking about this. And you're one of the very few, or maybe even the only one that I constantly see talking about it. So yes, thank you so much for that and increasing more, bringing more awareness to this.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you so much for coming on the show today and for sharing your story with us. It's been pretty inspiring and encouraging. And so I really appreciate you coming. And to everyone listening, remember TJ's book, Semen Secrets, is currently available on Amazon. So you can purchase it. And also, if you want to connect with her to ask more questions or talk to her, you can check her out on Instagram at Semen Secrets. And I believe you have a website.
Yes. So you can check me out at Semen Secrets. You can also go to www.semensecrets.com. And then I have my own personal Instagram page at TJ Payten. That's PEYTEN. Okay. So if you want to connect with me that way as well, you can. And if you want to learn more about male infertility, I'm learning more, and there's a network out there. So please, please feel free to DM me, send me an email. TJPayten@gmail.com is another way. I'm open to talk to anyone. So, and I just want to thank you for all of the work that you're doing, and just bringing up these conversations and taking it worldwide, internationally.
Yes.
I think it's so very important. So I pray blessings upon you and what you're doing and what you're going to continue to do. And
Amen.
We need so many more of you in this space.
Thank you so much for all your words of encouragement and hope today, and for sharing your experience about male factor infertility.
Thank awesome. You so Thank you.
Yes. Bye for now. Have a wonderful day.
You do the same.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Fertility Conversations podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star rating and subscribe. Follow us on Instagram at Fertility Conversations. If there are any topics you would like to have discussed, please send an email to fertilityconversations@gmail.com. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. Thank you again for listening. Take care of yourself and do stay hopeful.